This is a really good story, it seems like, how colleges and universities handle disciplinary cases, especially with the use of colleges and their AI detectors. Do they use these to try and see if kids are using, like, sorry, I keep on saying kids for college. I know they're adults, young adults, from, like, using ChatGPT to write their papers and stuff?
Exactly. So there's these commercial products. There's a number of them. One's called Turnitin. There's a few others. And some universities and colleges basically, and it's very, we'll get into sort of the issues about it, but some teachers, professors use it, these so-called AI detectors, to run students' papers and exams through it. You know, obviously on papers, those are usually done from a distance over a period of time. Exams nowadays, a lot of times at the college level, are even done by the professor might give the student a prompt, might have a certain amount of time, days, to write their paper, et cetera, and then turn that in. And so what you're seeing is a lot of colleges and universities going to these commercial products where the professor runs the exam or the paper through these allegedly AI detectors, and then will sometimes come back to the student and say, gee, you're going to fail because my product that I use says that X percent of it is AI generated. You know, for example, 10%, 30%, 80%, whatever, and then dings them in terms of giving them an F and or failing them in the class, and then it kind of progresses through the system, and we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the starting point for this analysis.
Well, I think actually, and that's a great start to it, and immediately my argument is, well, they should be disciplined for it. Actually, we have a caller on this topic, a former teacher. Mike, you mind if I bring him in?
Sure.
Frank, what are your thoughts? What's your question for Mike Leonard regarding this topic?
Yeah, this is, you know, this is very complicated because, you know, you have, you know, old rules about plagiarism don't really apply, in my view. AI has a real positive role. It can have a very positive role. I guess my question is, what defense would you have if you've got these AI detectors that don't necessarily say, hey, you copied this word for word from this source? It just sort of says, you know, possibly generated by AI. How are, as a college kid, and I've got a son going off to college, what's the defense against it? How do you fight a English department or something like that, where they're using these sorts of things that aren't foolproof?
That's a great question, Frank, and it leads perfectly into Mike Leonard's arguments. Because, yeah, I think I maybe didn't quite get the nuance, but I think Frank put it right there perfectly, that it's not quite plagiarism where it's word for word. It's using AI to perhaps, you know, find and form different thoughts and using some of what you get back, putting it in your own word. I don't know, Mike, it was a great call. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it's a weird thing. So Frank makes a great point. What generally happens when you use one of these commercial products, it'll tell you, it'll assign a percentage. It'll say something like X percentage is believed to, or possibly, it doesn't say definitively, possibly AI generated. Okay. Here's the big problem as a starting point. Major universities like Vanderbilt, University of Texas, Austin, Michigan State, various others have banned these AI detectors because of their unreliability. And the interesting thing is some of the commercial products, including the one I mentioned before, say in their directions to the university who purchase these programs that it's not a plagiarism detector and it generates false positives.
Hmm.
So the crazy thing is, you know, the student turns the exam or paper in, gets this back from the teacher and says, gee, it says that it could be up to X percent AI generated without really any means of comparing it to any particular source, which is really crazy.
It spits out a number. It doesn't actually show you, well, here it is, here's the original source, here's what the paper was, and look at these two things together. It doesn't give you like that evidence. It just gives you their result.
No, correct. So they will sometimes highlight portions of the allegedly offending paper exam, but they do not cite to, you know, sources like, hey, you know, Dickens at page 47. They don't do that for you, right? So the unfairness of it, we like to represent accused John, as you know, and fight for the rights of people that sometimes don't have them. The difficulty is, number one, going into this process, it's very rare for a professor teacher to tell the students, hey, if this product comes back and says you're above X percent, we're going to ding you. So there's no notice in advance that this is what they're going to do or what the standard is, right? No one knows what the standard even is, and some don't even know they're going to be using this commercial product. And then, as your listener made a great point, it's just giving you a percentage. So how do you defend against something that doesn't tell you what you copied from, right?
Right.
And furthermore, as Frank pointed out, obviously, when people are doing research, AI is considered a legitimate form of research, right? So you can get information from it, just like when we were kids, we would copy from the World Book Encyclopedia. John, maybe you're not young enough for that or old enough for that, but not copy, but you utilize that as a source. But the problem is, even when you're citing to sources, you're paraphrasing from them, you're quoting them, you're putting things in your own words, AI can still say, gee, we think you are improperly using AI technology. So
right.
It's difficult.
What are the consequences usually? Is it usually like a course failure, or can they kick you out of the college?
Well, they have a lot of discretion. So typically what happens is, at the initial level, a professor or teacher will say, hey, you know, I ran through this program. And sometimes, without any opportunity to defend yourself, they will issue, you know, a decision. You say, hey, Johnny, you know, you're getting an F on this paper. I'm giving you a zero for the course. You're going to get a D or an F or whatever. There are obviously lesser penalties. But sometimes you don't even get a chance to even defend yourself at that initial take, right? Sometimes you do. They'll say the teacher will have a one-on-one with the student. And it really depends upon the university's procedures. Some have real definite procedures about this. Some don't have any at all. And then sometimes you're able to actually talk to the professor, defend yourself. But the problem is, when you can't really rebut something that doesn't tell you what it claims you copied something from, it's difficult.
Well, then where do you come in? Where do you come in, Mike? Because it's not a criminal case. And what did you threaten, like a civil lawsuit if something happens?
Yes, because it is. I mean, it's not criminal, but it has a lot of the elements of criminal because of the right to due process, usually in the university setting, the potential property right in your academic career, the implications and consequences of getting something in your transcript that says you in academic misconduct. It's a pretty big deal. So typically where we are hired is after that initial stage where the student's told, hey, we're going to take this draconian step against you. Either you're going to fail, you're going to get a D or an F, you're going to get a notation misconduct in your transcript, because most, if not all universities, which they all have mechanisms by which you can appeal. Okay.
Right. Hey, Mike, I'm going to put you on pause here just for a second. I want to pick up this conversation after the break. Phone line's getting a little jittery there, Radio. Maybe we can reconnect with Mike too. I just want to make sure we got a solid connection with Mike there. Frank, that was a great question, by the way. Frank, we'll dive into it a little bit more after the break. Okay, bud? Okay, that's very good. I forgot to turn on Frank's mic. So there we go. Frank, thank you for calling. Carolyn's got a great point, too. Some great texts as well. We'll do that after this. Mike Leonard, Leonard Trial Lawyers. Mike, we've been talking about AI and how college campuses, many of them, use a detection software that kind of spits out a report on what a student writes. They say something like, oh, we think 48% of this was AI generated. They don't really give you more specifics. They start taking disciplinary actions against students, which have a wide range. And you step in to try and help some students maybe have a defense of this. Although, as you've pointed out, it's sort of hard. So maybe having a lawyer like you step in is a good starting point for them.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's difficult as a student to even know, for their parents to know what their rights are in terms of procedures and processes. And a lot of it starts with what the university has put out there as their procedures and processes and how you can use those to your advantage or to defend yourself in light of, you know, what they say you're entitled to. And of course, you know, the implications are huge. You know, no one wants to be kind of have the black mark of an alleged cheater on their record, even if it's a one-time thing. So It's extremely important to attempt to win on appeal, or even before that, by bringing to the university all the information you can, including these major studies and major universities saying that these alleged detectors are unreliable and they shouldn't be used.
Let's go to the phone lines. Carolyn's got a thought. Carolyn, I just hung up on Mike Iridian. Can we call Mike Leonard back?
Hello?
I just hung up on him. Hey, Carolyn, how are you doing? We're gonna you and I are gonna tap dance a little bit while we get Mike Leonard on the line, because I accidentally hung up on him when I put you on. Carolyn, you're an English teacher, right?
I have been an English teacher for 30 years. I started when I was very young. But no, I'm just wanting to call because I have such intense, passionate opinions about this. As a high school English teacher, I think it's our responsibility to be proactive and to really, if we want to teach students how to be good critical thinkers, we have to.
Oh, of course that would happen. Let's get Mike Leonard now on the line. Hopefully, Carolyn, I think she's already calling back. But Mike, sorry to drop you there. That was my fault, by the way.
Oh, it's okay, John. It sounded like we're getting at the meat of a great point. I don't know where that was going to end.
She'll call back. You know? Is that Carolyn back online too already? Yeah, let's get Carolyn back on. Carolyn, sorry you just were dropped, but you were saying that critical thinking is so important. Continue.
Yes, critical thinking is so important that as junior high and high school teachers, we try to be proactive and teach synthesis skills, which means, you know, a responsible ethical use of media in all forms. I also do a great deal of writing in class with students.
That's too bad. Carolyn is wonderful. An English teacher we've hung up on twice. But Mike, I think that she's making a great point and getting at it. Like the idea of that AI can be used for good things. And if it's going to be here, and it is going to be here, and it's going to be here for the long run, that you need to teach kids how to use it. And with that, we'll kind of blur the lines of what is an ethical or non-ethical use. I think that's kind of what we were driving at.
Yeah, I'd love to hear her final point to that, because I'd really like to know what steps, if any, she's able to take in her classrooms to use something that is reliable as one of these purported AI detection mechanisms when there's all these studies out there that say they're not reliable.
Well, let's not plagiarism detectors. Let's ask Carolyn. Carolyn, how do you monitor then whether they're using it appropriately or not?
I write with them. I write with them in class. We sometimes use pen and pencil and paper. I come to know their writing and teach those skills of how to integrate sources and citing sources and knowing what's plagiarism, knowing what isn't. So it's a good deal of knowing who your students are and really working with them on responsible citizenship with all sorts of publication.
Well said. And Carolyn, I just want to say, shout out, first of all, English teachers. Oh my gosh, amazing.
Yes.
And I think I've said this on the air before. It is my most embarrassing, maybe my most shameful thing I've ever done in my life. I was a high school senior. I was super busy in the musicals and everything like that. And the internet had just come out. And I literally ripped like maybe 2.5 pages out of a 4-page paper off the internet and plagiarized it right away.
Easily done, but we can work around that.
Well, so then the English teacher, I'll never forget, I don't want to say his name here just in case he isn't happy I'm sharing this. I'd never forget, he was returning the papers to everyone in their class, and I didn't get one back. And then I knew that he knew. And he said, John, why don't you pop into my office after class? And I immediately like started welling up in my eyes, because I knew I had done something so wrong. And he says, you're going to rewrite this paper in your own words. You're getting a zero on this paper. And I probably lost a letter grade and a half in that class for that. But I wasn't held from graduating. I was so glad I learned that lesson and got caught in high school as opposed to in college and then as an adult. I mean, it was such an important lesson to learn. And I just, God bless the English teacher for punishing me as I should have been. I should have gotten a zero on that and gotten dinged. But anyways, right. I'm sure you would work through those sorts of things similarly, Carolyn.
I can ask a student what one word means. You know, Victor, do you know what reticent is? And he'll say no. And I'll say, okay, let's do this again. And it's a zero. And that's a way to be proactive and really, as you said, get the student to learn earlier on than failing a college course.
Yeah, for sure. Carolyn, thanks for all your work and all that you do. And thanks for chiming in, okay?
Thank you.
And we only hung up on her twice, so that's great news. Thanks, Carolyn. Mike, we just got a couple minutes left. Do you mind if I take one more call?
Oh, sure. Go for it, John. We always want to hear from the callers. Yeah, they're more interesting than us all the time.
For sure. From one mic to the other. Mike, what's your thoughts on this? We've got about 30 seconds.
I think that it depends on the grade level, especially a collegiate level. There's only so many ways that you can write a particular topic. The information is out there in the world. You're trying to learn, and you're trying to convey the thoughts of stuff that's already been developed and evolved from a conceptual perspective to a teacher. So I don't see any point in not using AI. It's how people are going to work and do things anyway in the future.
And but yeah, using it in a way that still allows you to critically analyze and have original thoughts from it. But yeah, you can use AI literally to do it like Wikipedia. Like, what are the 10 most popular, or what are the 10 reasons World War II ended? It can give you some analysis, and from there you use it in a thoughtful way. You just can't copy and paste it, but it's a fine line.
Teacher's responsibility to provide thoughtful questions that would help to avert having to use AI answers exclusively.
Right.
So those well-developed, multi-layered questions are the way that you can challenge the student to learn and provide additional information without using AI.
Love it. Mike, thanks for the phone call, okay?
Yes.
And Mike Leonard, he brings up great points.
Oh, absolutely. I might have to hire Mike and Carolyn to be my expert witnesses on my defense.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah, the other thing that's troublesome in that not only is the detector considered unreliable by many major universities, but there's no uniformity in most schools about the use of the detector. So, for example, you might be taking the same class as your buddy who's in a different section of this English class everyone's taking, and they might not be using the detectors at all, or they might have a different standard for what triggers an alleged, violation. So there's all sorts of issues which make each case, kind of unique on its own facts.
For sure. Hey, Mike Leonard, I got to go. What number should people call you at, or what address?
312-380-6559, LeonardTrialers.com. Thanks a lot, John.
Take care, Mike.